today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Leonardo DiCaprio reprises part of his Titanic reputation at sea, helping to save a man overboard. Alaska Airlines is leaving Hawaii, at least as far as Sacramento is concerned, and Yosemite National Park, as you heard in the headlines in the news, is battling a food illness issue. Details next in the travel news.
At 3:20, we make you a smarter traveler as I talk with Steve Gordon, director of the California DMV, about the Real ID. Steve has some simple, easy-to-understand information for you.
At 3:35, we dip into the Travel Guys mailbag. Our listeners have asked what some travel companies are doing about pollution and trash, whether or not they should still make a planned trip to Australia this year, and if a global scavenger hunt they heard about is on the up and up.
Mark will answer the questions that you sent us at TravelGuysRadio.com. It's one of my favorite features, the mailbag. Mark has a big list and some great answers to a lot of your favorite questions.
Just a personal observation, if you leave your radio on for another 57 minutes, you are going to be a smarter traveler. That's just the way it works here on The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I've got two tickets to paradise.
Up to Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
Well, hey there, friends. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And again, follow along and links to our special guests and such at TravelGuysRadio.com. I'm here in the studio, KFPK studio, not too far from Cal Expo. And Mark is about, a couple of thousand miles or more away, and One of his favorite hangouts, and we'll talk about that, in Orlando, Florida. Mark, ahoy, matey.
We're kind of landlocked here in Orlando, so to speak, but not too many boats around. This is Orlando, one of the most visited places in the United States.
I can tell by the tone of your voice that it's probably one of your favorites. Actually, folks, you know, Mark and I were talking before we went on the air, and he had this kind of gloomy tone about Orlando. I mean, I go there to Disney World, but what's your overall impression, Mark? You were there for a little conference of some sort, I do believe.
This is a place where they extract money from tourists. That's their sole purpose in life here in this particular area. And they're very good at it. And you can stay as long as your wallet can handle the stress, I think. I'm here for a travel conference, looking at other destinations, anything besides Orlando, and other places for people to go. No, this has never been one of my favorite spots. I've long contended that if Walt Disney hadn't gotten one hell of a deal here, none of this would be here now. But at least the weather's nice here. It was 82 here today, Tom. What was it like in Sacramento?
Let's see. I think we're going to top out at about 53. It's kind of chilly, not freezing at night, but definitely overcast pretty much all day. We almost saw the sun for a second or two. You pointed out something that you learned while in Orlando, and that has to do with the price of gas if you got to return a rental car. What's your travel tip for those that may have rented an automobile in Orlando?
If I'm going back to the airport in the morning, and so it's been a few years since the last time I was here, but the last time I was in Orlando, much to my surprise, when I got ready to return the rental car, and I thought, well, you know, I'll get gas when I get close to the airport. I know there are a lot of service stations in Orlando in proximity of the airport, and when I got up to the airport, very close there, I looked and there was a corner with four service stations. Every single one of them had the exact same gasoline price. At the time, we were paying about $3 a gallon in Sacramento, and it was $5.99 here in Orlando, close to the airport. So tomorrow, I'll be filling my tank before I get that close to the airport. And I'll give you a report back next week on how that goes. But $5.99, which was one of the reasons that I didn't like Orlando the last time I was here. So anyways, there are lots of destinations in Florida. This just doesn't happen to be my favorite one. I'll be back here in a couple weeks in Miami and then on down to Key West, which is one of my favorite destinations. So it does has nothing to do with Florida. This is just one that is a little bit too touristy for my blood.
All right. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date what's been going on in the travel news. And with that, once again, back to fabulous Orlando. It's nearly broke Mark with the travel news.
Oh, Thomas. Quickly, here's some travel news for today. You know, at many major airports, the rideshare business has become so overwhelming. It's so outstripped the taxi business. And in many cases, even the pickups and drop-offs by people of their friends and stuff who are traveling, ride sharing has become the way to get to and from the airport. And many airports have been simply overwhelmed. Logan Airport in Boston is one of them. So just a heads up, if you're headed to Logan Airport soon in Boston, they have suffered the same situation as folks in Los Angeles who now have to take a shuttle bus to get to the Uber and Lyft pickups in many cases, depending on what terminal you're from. In Logan, you're going to have to walk a considerable distance and go to a part of the airport that previously was held for employee parking. And folks who have, looking on the web, folks who have attempted this say, allow yourself an extra 15 minutes if you're being dropped off or picked up by Uber or Lyft. And they also give you a little bit of a tip in case your driver doesn't know. Or we've talked about this, using this in Sacramento. When you're picking people up who are arriving, this works the other way in Boston. They will drop you at the terminal in the arrivals area if you're being dropped off early in the morning. So if you are a rideshare person and you use rideshares to get to airports or to be picked up at airports, just know that things may not be the same as they were the last time you were in town the next time that you get there. Does that make sense?
Well, okay. It does. Yes, it does. It absolutely
does. Finding your rideshare in many airports now has become somewhat of an adventure. I can speak for LaGuardia and Miami, myself. So if you're in a large airport, in some cases, it just has become too difficult for them to put it curbside because there is just too much activity.
Absolutely. Well, one of the nice things, though, is as time goes on, at least the airports are putting signs away from the terminal as you're approaching it, and it'll give you kind of an indication as to where it is. For a long time, you had no idea. You had to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things that some of the folks who have been to Logan Airport in Boston in the last week or so said the signage isn't quite up to snuff yet. So hopefully that will get better. We mentioned in the headlines that Alaska Airlines, which started service from Sacramento to Hawaii only in the last couple of years, will be leaving completely those markets on May the 19th. It will end its Sacramento-Maui run to Kahului. In March, the three-day-a-week run to the Big Island will end, so Alaska will be completely out of the Hawaii market. We will still have Hawaiian Airlines and Southwest Airlines flying both to Honolulu and to Kahului, Maui. But we will not have any nonstop service to any of the outside airlines to any of the outside islands, at least not yet. President Trump is trying to peddle, his organization is trying to peddle their Washington hotel. Tom, if you have a simple $500 million, you can pick up the lease here. It's only $2 million a room. And the reason it's so expensive probably wouldn't matter whether the president was selling or you and I were selling it. If you would, like you and I would have a hotel worth $500 million. But it's because of where it's located, it's the old post office building, and it's got a terrific location. It's really close to Capitol Hill. So if you know you're in the lobbying business or the influence business or something like that in Washington, D.C., this would be one heck of a location. And if you have an extra $500 million laying around, you too could own your own hotel in a great spot like that.
Yeah, I bet it's a moneymaker. It's probably very profitable.
Well, you would think they didn't release any financial details with the prospectus for the lease, and you have only until January the 23rd to submit your bid. So if you're thinking about this one, don't think too long or you'll get left out.
I'm all over it.
mentioned at the top of the hour on the KFBK news was the food issue in Yosemite National Park. Indeed, they've had a number of folks who have come down with a stomach-borne type of illness in recent weeks. A cause has not been determined yet. Officials are working with Aramark, which is the name of the concession vendor in the park, to inspect the restaurants, hotels, and snack shops, trying to find the culprit. Aramark is one of the nation's largest food concessionaires, counting among its numerous other parks, sports facilities, and colleges as clients. Aramark is just a terrible. What an awful choice for Yosemite as a concessionaire vendor. And this is substantiated by the fact that the famous Awani Hotel, which is now the food service in the hotel, is run by the concessionaire Aramark. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, Aramark has received numerous complaints from visitors about poor food quality, and the other services has been managing Yosemite's concessions 4 years ago. The Awani Hotel, Tom, you may have heard this, recently lost one of its diamonds. It's been a four-diamond hotel forever. Now it's a three-diamond hotel, and in part because of the problems with the food service. So now the vendor is having, we're having some food service problems in Yosemite National Park. Maybe it's because they didn't pick the right people to do the job. Leonardo DiCaprio is in the news. Call it a little bit ironic, or call it life imitating art, but the Academy Award-winning actor, whose character dies at the end of the blockbuster 1997 film Titanic, helped save the life of a man who fell overboard from another ship in the Caribbean. According to several media outlets, including People magazine, DiCaprio was traveling with his girlfriend and several friends near St. Bart's on a rented boat when an emergency call came in. A man had fallen drunken overboard. A drunken man had fallen overboard from a Club Med yacht. Leo and his friends and their boat captain decided to join the search. It turned out to be the only private boat in the area. The man had been treading water for 11 hours. They were able to find him and rescue him. And so that happened on December the 30th. So how interesting that the man who stood up at the front of the ship there on the movie Titanic has now played a role in rescuing a man at sea. Pretty interesting stuff.
Wow, that's bizarre. That's bizarre.
Well, yeah, isn't that?
Hey, look, we've got a great interview coming up after the break. Are you done with the news?
We're done. That is your travel news for today.
All right. Good, good. All right. Coming up right after a couple of minute timeout, we visit with Steve Gordon. We're going to find out all about the real ID and how to go about getting it. That's next on the Travel Guys.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio.
Thanks for joining us. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, again brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And links to our special guests and other information to make you a smarter traveler can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, we continue to pursue that coveted and ever so valuable accurate information as to what you need and how you go about getting that real ID, so that come October, you'll still be able to board your favorite airlines and visit family, friends, and do business. So we thought we'd bring on an expert to help out with that. That would be Steve Gordon. Steve is the Director of the California Department of Motor Vehicles. Steve, welcome to the Travel Guys.
Great. Thanks, Tom and Mark. Glad to be here.
Let's start off, Steve, by just telling folks who needs a real ID and when do they need it by?
Well, everybody needs a real ID if they're going to be traveling domestically in the United States, unless they have a passport or another military or government ID. But the general rule is that everybody should get a real ID, and the date is October 1st, 2020. This is a Department of Homeland Security requirement, part of the 9/11 activities, to get everybody sort of revalidated to make sure that they are who they say they are. And to do that, each state has requirements to get people vetted for real IDs, and we're trying to live up to our end of the bargain and getting all Californians who travel a real ID.
Now, Steve, is it also true that you need a real ID to enter a federal courthouse or a military base?
That's correct. So there's a number of other activities that, beyond just traveling, that if you want to go onto a military base, as you mentioned, or any place, a federal facility that requires an ID. Matter of fact, during my interview process for this job, I met a trash hauler that removed trash from a federal facility, but he needed a real ID so he can actually get on the facility to remove the trash. So it's all across the spectrum of anybody who visits these facilities, whether it's an airport or another government facility, that's going to need a real ID.
Okay, let's walk folks through this step at a time. What are the steps to take to getting a real ID?
Well, the first step is to really be prepared, right? So we have a microsite that we've stood up that's specific for real ID. So realid.dmv.ca.gov. So we encourage people to go there. Once you're there, what it's going to tell you is the documents you're going to need. And primarily that means you're going to need to have something that identifies you. Normally that's a passport. In some cases it's a birth certificate. Those are the two most common items. And we primarily see passports in the office. You're going to need something with your full Social Security number on it. It needs to be an original document. So whether it's your Social Security card, a pay stub, but something that has the full nine digits. And then you're going to need two documents that have residency information. That's usually a utility bill, so a SMUD bill, PG&E bill, whatever it might be, but two different ones from two different utilities that would have residency information. It could be a tax document from if you're a homeowner, but it has to have your name on it, has to have your address, and so on. As a matter of fact, the addresses and the names need to match across all of those documents that I mentioned.
Steve, what if somebody has just moved into California or into another state where obviously everybody's going to need these, and they haven't had an opportunity to establish a residency as of yet? They want to get a driver's license for that state. What do you recommend that they do in regards to showing proof of residency?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting scenario. I don't know if I have the full answer for you, Tom, but on that particular one, as people are new to the state and they haven't established residency, I'm certain that we will send them to go get interim documents so they can be able to, when they register for utility service, they're going to get something from, you know, PG&E, or they're going to get something from SMUD if you're here in Sacramento, and be able to bring those documents in. But yeah, if you're brand new in the state, you just drove across the border, I don't believe you're going to have the ability to get a real ID because you haven't established residency yet. But as you establish those things, which you will be doing very, very soon, I think you'll be able to get over that hump within the first couple of weeks of your residency in the state.
My guest is Steve Gordon, director of California State DMV, talking about real IDs. Steve, what about women and people who have had name changes? You know, particularly those, like I say, women that they get married, they got a name change going on. Do you need to bring a marriage license, that kind of proof? What do you need there?
Right. So if you have the documents that we talked about, you know, a passport that has the same name on it, that your residency documents and has the same name and on both of those residency documents, and of course it matches, you know, the name on your Social Security card, then you're golden. So some people actually do a really good job when they change their names, they update all those documents. It's really the use case, I think, you know, Tom, that you're talking about is there are some folks that live with multiple names. You know, they haven't converted their passport because they were recently divorced, let's say, or they recently changed or recently married, just changed their name, and they haven't completed the process. And that's where people need to bring in sort of, if you will, sort of the chain of custody to show old name, new name, marriage certificate, divorce papers, and so on. But what we see more often than not is most of the people actually go through the full name change process. And once they go through the name change process, then they're as straightforward as all the other residents.
How far in advance should you begin this process? Should you make an appointment still to get to the DMV on a certain date and time to get your real ID? Are walk-ins still encouraged? Bring us up to date.
Right. So really good set of questions there. So first, we encourage people to, you know, to get the paperwork filled out early. And matter of fact, we're just in a proof of concept with what we're calling a DMV Express service. It's really focused on real ID, and it allows you to upload the documents that we talked about earlier. And that technology actually, if you will, reads the information, makes sure that it's valid. So the names matches, the address match, and so on. So by the time you leave that application, you will know that you're ready to go into the office. And so you can still walk in, you can still bring in those documents, but this application, as it rolls out across the state, is really going to help people know that they're prepared. Now, getting ready to come in the office, we're trying to encourage people to come in now. Wait times have never been lower. In some cases, you know, they are measured in, you know, 10, 15-minute intervals. And better yet, you can actually, as you check in at the offices, we'll ask you for your mobile phone number so we can send you an SMS, a text message, say, hey, you're next in line. So that way, if you want to go next door and grab a Starbucks or grab something to eat or run an errand, you still have the ability to have that flexibility in your life. You don't have to sit in our waiting room as much as we would like to accommodate you, but you know, people want to get other stuff done. So we would encourage people to walk in right now and go ahead and pop in. We're also experimenting with same-day appointments, and that's on the near-term horizon because we want people, once they've done their preparation, that usually is a sign that they want to take action. So we want to facilitate that and allow them to come in. That's at a very early stage, but we realize that's critical. So we know appointments sometimes are a couple of months out, so we're encouraging people to walk in today, not wait until it's March or not wait until it's summer when we expect there's going to be some crunch period. So again, encourage people to fill out their documents in advance. As this new technology allows them to upload, they should upload the documents, let them get pre-verified so they know they're ready, and then come on in. I mean, we would love for them to come on in straight away, and let's get this thing knocked out so that they're in a clear state come October 1st, and we feel pretty good about it as well.
You know, Steve, I've talked to folks who have debated about what particular DMV in their area to go. You know, there's some of the larger ones that are in more populated areas seem to be extra busy. So, you know, they're looking at maybe a fringe community, one that's a little ways away that may not be as busy. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think those are all great strategies. You know, we publish all of our wait times, and they're usually up to date within 15 minutes. So I think if you go out to the DMV website and you actually go look for the local offices, we'll show you what the current wait time is. So that's one way to look and find out, well, when should you pop in? And you find out that there's, as you can imagine, there's patterns during the day. In the early afternoon is a little slower than first thing in the morning. But I did a tour of DMV offices on the Central Coast just last week, and there are people, believe it or not, in King City. They say, oh, yeah, we get a lot of people from the Bay Area. They come down to King City, have some nice wine. They enjoy the Pinot Noir in the area, and they get their IDs or their other DMV work done. So there are people that are adventure DMV tourists, if you will. I would encourage people just to look at the wait times and just, you know, be strategic about it. And you know, you'll find that the times that you're spending there, especially with the text messaging service, is really minimal. And by the way, we have these driver's license processing, so these SLDPs. And that's another area that's singularly focused on driver's license. And there's a few of those around the state. They really are able to get people in and out very, very quickly. So you can also look for those.
Again, my guest, Steve Gordon, the director of the California State DMV. Steve, thanks for joining us with the Travel Guys today. Before I let you go, any final words, any comments, anything I didn't ask you that you want to make sure our listeners are aware of?
Well, you got the October 1st deadline that's coming up. I'm encouraging everyone. Anybody who will listen to us, trying to encourage people to get people to come into the office, fill out the forms, and do it now. Don't wait till the last minute. We don't want you to miss your flight. We don't want you to miss next Thanksgiving. We want you to be home with your kids because you'll be able to board a flight getting home. So get it done now. Go out to the Real ID website, realid.dmv.ca.gov. And I really appreciate you guys getting this on the air and really helping your travelers get where they want to be throughout the year.
No, thanks, Steve. And again, if you missed that, go to travelguysradio.com. We'll have a link to that website there as well. Steve, can we check back with you in a few months and see how things are going?
I'd love it. Thank you. Please do.
All right. Our guest again, Steve Gordon with the DMV. Steve, thanks for being with us here on the Travel Guys. You travel safe.
Yes, great. Thank you very much.
Wow. What some great information that was.
Absolutely, and I have some more great information for you. I went and got my Real ID on Saturday up at the Folsom DMV. I had an appointment, and I will share with you how that all came out, the ups and downs when we get back.
Well, you're here talking to us, so that's good news. Tom Romano with First Person on the Real ID right here on the Travel Guys after the news on KFBK.
So, if you want to be leaving on a jet plane anytime after October 1st, unless something changes, you better have that Real ID. Mark is in Orlando. I'm in studio. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, have you acquired your Real ID yet?
I have not. So, you are the only travel guy with an official Real ID. I plan to have some time in mid-February, and hearing from the gentleman there, from Steve, that at this point, at least, you can that walk-in appointments are still available. So I'm kind of hoping, since the appointments are a couple months out, they're up into early March now, that I can walk in February. But you apparently have already gotten your act together and taken care of things just this last week.
I'll tell you, I was like a kid getting his driver's license for the first time. I was so excited to do this, and I don't know why. I mean, I got a new driver's license about a year ago. Unfortunately, I got it before they started to issue the driver's license with the official star and seal and so forth to make it a real ID. You know, the things I learned was, number one, you know, right now it's starting to pick up. Over the holidays, there were a lot of people who did walk-ins and were in and out in 30 minutes or less. And even if you have an appointment, you still might have to wait a while. I had an 11 o'clock in the morning appointment. Folsom DMV was jammed. There was a lot of people. Nobody in the line for appointments only. So I was able to go up there and show them my documentation. I had my birth certificate. And it's a perfect timing, too, because if you vote, just recently they sent out your voter registration card.
Uh-huh.
And so I took my voter registration card. And if you're old enough, is like dirt, like me, and are actually, you know, receiving a 1099 from the Social Security Administration and into your statement, that has everything on it. So you don't even need your Social Security card. You've got a statement of earnings from the Social Security. You show them that. And then those are the two pieces of that have your mailing address and your name on it. That are legitimate pieces. Another good one is DMV registration for an automobile, which is going to come to your home address. And who's it from? It's from the DMV. So they like to see those. So you do like Steve said, go online and fill out the application. They had my application. About the only thing they do is they print it out. They have you take a look at it and make sure that it's accurate, and you sign off on that. You get yourself a new thumbprint, and be prepared. They're going to take a new picture for your driver's license, for your new real ID driver's license. Even if you recently had one, they're not going to repurpose that old license. So, you know, if you think you're just going to, you know, go in and look in your worst, thinking you're going to get your real ID and you don't have to worry about the picture thing. Most people don't really care about their driver's license pictures. It's almost a novelty in itself, but you'll get a new picture and that'll be it. They'll give you a temporary and wait about 3 weeks for the real license ID to come. There, if you choose, you don't have to change out your driver's license to get a real ID. They can issue you a real ID card if you so desire. I don't know why you would want to choose that option, to be frank, except for the fact it did cost me $36 to do this process. Perhaps just the ID card may be less. Any questions, yeah. Well, boys and girls?
I thought Steve had some. Basically, what they're telling us is that they've got some information online that will help you be prepared. The problem that we were seeing to start with was people showing up and not having the proper documentation, which meant they had to come back. So yeah. It's really critical that this be a one-stop deal, because if folks have to go twice, that's going to mean twice as many people at DMV, and for a situation that some are already concerned about, that would be a catastrophe. So anything that they can do or that you can do as a individual to be better prepared when you get there, so you only have to make the one trip and don't have to spend all day, is a good thing.
You know, I have a question that was posed to me since I went in for the ID, a family member, and brought it up. You know, I didn't ask Steve, and we didn't ask the TSA guys. You know, to get yourself a pre-check, you need virtually the same documentation as you need to get your real ID. And so the question is, well, gee, if I have a real ID, couldn't I just use that as documentation to get pre-check?
Ah.
You know, it's like a passport. If you got a passport, and mm-hmm. I think you have one, or at least you did. I don't know how often you keep it up to date. But if you've got a passport, right. You don't need a real ID. It'll take the place of when you go to.
Yes. But one thing that was kind of interesting, I thought, was Steve talking about there before we get on to the mailbag here, was Steve talking about the fact that reminding people that there are other places besides just an airport that you won't be able to get into if you don't have this approved federal real ID, that there are some other ramifications, and there are some people who regularly visit those sorts of places. So make sure that even if you don't travel, if you visit a federal facility where you have to show an ID, I'm going to suggest to you that, you know, a military installation, any place like that, you may very well have to have one of those IDs even though you don't travel. So if you show an ID upon entering any type of military facility, then you might want to check to make sure that you don't fit into that category. So thank you, Thomas, for all of that. Let's get over here to the mailbag. I have got a long list of questions here.
Okay, since I don't have them in front of me and I can't see you all the way to Orlando, let's get started. What are people interested in knowing, Mark?
All right, let's see here. John in Elk Grove says, heard you talking about people who abuse airline agents at the counter and at the gate. I agree in most cases that those people didn't cause your problem and yelling at them won't help. But occasionally your problem is a result of something that person did or will not do. When the service doesn't follow the airline's own rules, it's no wonder people get upset. Not a question as much as an observation. Have you ever had that situation, Tom, where you've gotten to the airport and something isn't going well and the frustration is growing? And
well, you know, I have to say that has happened to me in a lot of other places. You know, I have to say the people at the airlines, whether it's the TSA or specifically at the counter, here again, I'm an exclusive Southwest flyer. I've found nothing but happy, friendly, helpful people. I don't know where people are running into these problems. How about you?
Well, mixed reactions. I agree with our buddy Chris Elliott, who says basically you get more bees with honey, and that if you're in one of those situations where they're not doing exactly what you want them to do, negotiation and camaraderie is a lot better than getting unhappy and making the fact known to the person behind the counter that you're really not happy with the way things are going. Sometimes things happen that are totally out of the control of those people, and they have very limited options as to what they can do. As John points out, our listener who asked the question about this, he's right. Sometimes they are directly responsible for what's happening to you. However, even in those situations, you are better off to tuck in your wings a little bit and try to negotiate your way and keep a smile on your face and get through it, because otherwise it's probably not going to end well for you, and you're probably in a time situation where you've got limited considerations. You know, maybe you were supposed to be in the first class cabin and your seat got taken away from you, or you know, there's some problem with you've missed your connection and they're not telling you what you want to hear. But you know, remember, look at your app and see if you've been rebooked. Also consider the fact that if you're not getting the answer that you need at the gate or at the ticket counter, if you're not getting the answer you need at the ticket counter, pick up and try the phone. If you're not getting the answer you need at the gate and you have the time, then maybe go back to the ticket counter. Or perhaps you're in an airport where that airline has a number of gates and you have a simple question and you can go to another gate and get an answer. But definitely, even if it's their fault, when you're in one of these situations, it's like arguing with a police officer. It's not likely to turn out better for you.
Makes sense. Makes sense. You know, there's, we talked about it some time ago. If you don't get the answer that you want, particularly on the phone, hang up, call back, get somebody else, revisit it a second time, and you might be surprised. After a couple of two or three calls, you'll get the right person that will help you with your problem.
Melinda in Rancho Cordova says she saw something on the internet that seemed fishy. It's called the Global Scavenger Hunt. Since the fee for entering the contest is $25,000 per team of two people, she says, I immediately thought, this is a scam. Have you ever heard of something like this? Well, Melinda, Tom, remember when we had the contestants from tour operator friend of mine and her daughter participated in this a few years ago?
We sure did. We had them a guest on the show, and in fact, it does exist. That is the fee. And Mark, you got details. It covers pretty much What, first class hotel?
They call it a blind date with the world, and it covers your hotels, which Sue said when she would talk to us about it a couple of years ago when she participated, said they were good hotels. It seemed to be reasonably well organized. And you're going to go to a lot of different international destinations and accomplish tasks that allow you to compete against other people. It is $25,000 for two people, and they do it every year. And it isn't a scam. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you should be able to find a list. Now, I want to tell you something here. Our webmaster has been having some issues today with getting our website up. And I didn't speak to her right before we went on the air, and I haven't had time to check. So, Tom, maybe you can check there in the studio. But if you go to travelguysradio.com and you don't see this week's show, give it until tomorrow morning, and hopefully everything will be okay. But anyway, the global scavenger hunt is the real deal. This is another writer who didn't leave his or her name, says they're scheduled to travel to Australia in about a month for a vacation, including a cruise and some time in Sydney. Kind of sounds like a package that some sports leisure travelers are going to do. My wife does not want to go because of the fires and the smoke, but so far there's no way to cancel without heavy penalties. Can you offer any wisdom to help us make our decision? Is it safe in Australia? If you're going to Sydney, that's a huge city of millions and millions of people, and Sydney is not going to catch on fire. So they may have some problems in the suburbs. They may have we had Santa Rosa to San Francisco. So, but remember, Australia is a huge country. The problems are on the East Coast, on the southeastern coast. So if you are going anywhere to the western side of the country, you probably will not encounter these same types of situations. But Australia is our warmest continent, and all of our continents are getting warmer. So this is going to impact the people in Australia even more than anywhere else. And also, the other thing to remember is that if you're not traveling for a few weeks or even a month or two, listen, think about the fire in Santa Rosa, California, for example. It was a horrible situation. It lasted, what, maybe a week, 10 days, and then it died down. And if you were going to anywhere besides immediately in the city of Santa Rosa or some of its suburbs, you would have been fine. So don't panic too soon. If your trip isn't for a while, it's entirely possible that the fire situation could change down there, but it certainly is something to consider in the future. We tell folks not to travel to the southeastern United States during hurricane season. It may be time to tell people not to travel to Australia during fire season. So if you want to go down there, remember, it's the other hemisphere. The seasons are opposite, so you may want to head down there for the springtime, which would be like September, October, something like that, shoulder season, which would give you less chance of running into the fires. I may not be all the wisdom you were hoping for to our writer who wrote in to ask about Australia, but that's the best I can give you right now. And really and truly, if you go to the internet, the Australian tourism folks have got a number of websites that will give you daily updates, and I will get those posted at travelguysradio.com.
All right. By the way, I did check. I am at travelguysradio.com at the moment. And it looks like last week's show is still on the front page. So as soon as Melissa can get that squared away, she'll flip that over. And the links to the stuff that we had on today's show and all the topics there will arrive. And Okay. Anyway, anything left?
We do one more here? More and then take a break?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. Let's see here. Ahmed in Fair Oaks says, I'm a single father with two wonderful kids I am raising, ages 8 and 11. They will be visiting their grandparents at Easter. They will have to travel without me. Their grandparents live near Houston. Any advice you can offer would be appreciated. The airline websites are a little confusing. Okay, so Ahmed, we have two airlines. Houston is a huge city. If you think Los Angeles is sprawling, Los Angeles at least has an ocean on one side of it. Houston really does not. So it's a complete around-the-clock sprawl. Unfortunately, Houston has two airports, one on the north side of town and one on the south side of town. Other fortunate news, Sacramento has a nonstop to Houston on Southwest, to Houston Hobby Airport, and you have two nonstops a day from Sacramento on United Airlines to IAH. So you've got both Houston airports. So the thing to do is probably to consider the possibility of which airline you do a lot of business with. If you had status, high status with one of the airlines, then that might be a good choice. Also, what might be convenient to the people who are picking the kids up, because traffic in Houston and getting around in from one airport to another, those airports are almost an hour apart. So do your homework. Make sure you pick the right airport. My personal opinion, having watched many, many children fly on airplanes by themselves, they call them unaccompanied minors over the years, Southwest Airlines absolutely head and shoulders does the best job of taking care of kids. They are more fun people to start with. They seem to care more about their customers, and that certainly carries over to unaccompanied minors. So I give them my highest recommendation. I don't have anything to say pro or con about the other airlines, but I have noticed on more than one occasion that Southwest Airlines really goes out of their way to make sure that the kids that are flying alone are well taken care of. So go to their website, find out what information you can, give them a call with any questions, but keep in mind there is also a second carrier with nonstops to Houston. When kids are flying by themselves, some airlines require them to be on nonstop flights to their destination, but it's always better because obviously that eliminates the possibility of a plane change and something happening along the way. Hope that helps, Ahmed.
Very good. And by the way, while you were taking answering that one question, our website has now been updated. The Real ID updates from the director, a link there is now on board, as well as the other stuff that we're talking about today. All right, we're going to take a short time out. We'll be back. More of the Travel Guys just around the corner. Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you at TravelGuysRadio.com. If you go there, on the homepage, there's a place where you can send us a question. Ask a question, get an answer on the air with the Travel Guys. Says so right there. And, you know, we promised to do the mailbag a couple of weeks and got sidetracked. So we're trying to make up for it today. Mark, why don't you just continue where you left off for us, buddy?
All right, let's see here. We got three more. Let's see if we can get them all in. John in Reno says, I listen to your show by podcast each week. Thank you for making that available. I'd recommend it to your other listeners. I am working when you're on the radio, so the podcast is a big help. Being in Reno, we have to deal with I-80 coming to Sacramento. Who, in your opinion, provides the best road condition updates? That would be and has been for a long time Caltrans. You can just you can Google California road conditions and it'll come right up. It's roads.dot, which is also dot, roads.dot.california.gov. That's all very confusing. But anyway, yes, Caltrans has for decades provided really, really good information on road conditions, particularly in the mountains in Sacramento. I mean, they update it on every few minutes. And I've always found that they do a great job. So if you're headed to or from the mountains, that is a great place. And you can pull them up on your phone as long as you're someplace where you have a signal. Remember that when you're headed up to the mountains. Gail in Rancho Cordova says, remind your listeners about hotel cancellation policies. You used to be able to cancel up until 6 or 7 o'clock on the night you were scheduled to arrive. It isn't that way any longer, as we found out the hard way. Gail goes on to explain how they made a last-minute cancellation and got stuck for the room. Most hotels now make you cancel the day before or earlier to avoid being charged. Just wanted to share with you in case you didn't know. If you haven't traveled for a while or you don't travel frequently or you only stayed in one hotel for a long time, hotels have updated their cancellation policies. Generally, you need to cancel by 6 o'clock the day before you arrive. Some resorts and things like that are 2 or 3 or 4 days before arrival. Make sure you pay attention to that information when you're booking your hotel and make a note of what the cancellation date and time is so that you won't, write it in big, big letters right across the top of the confirmation. Susanna in Auburn quickly says, why is gas so expensive at the AM PM gas station at the airport? It's the only choice for miles in either direction. Their price is the highest in town, often 30 or 40% cents higher. Cynthia Nickel, the director of the airport, told us that they have to be a little higher because they take credit cards and they're an AM/PM. I still say that gas station is way overpriced, and we'll get on them about it, I promise. So, Thomas, that's the mailbag for today.
All right. Thanks, Mark. And thanks all of our listeners who sent in their questions. Again, travelguysradio.com. You can send us a question and we'll get it answered for you. And if we can't answer it on the air, Mark will send you back the answer in your email. All right. Mark, you have a safe trip home and we'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you. You dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you next Sunday at 3 o'clock.
All right. Stay well, my friends.